Blog Talk Radio.
April 8th, 2017. This is Earth Ancients. I'm your host, Cliff Dunning. Seems like the world is a bit synchronistic lately. The article that I wrote for Ancient Origins magazine on the Pyramid of the Serpent is coming out next week, and it's called Tiwanaku, Mexico, Uncovering Ancient Pyramid Science. And it's an eye-opener. Not only do I release information on some new photographs, but the internet has provided me with some serious new photographs that were just taken about a month ago. And I'll post the article on the Facebook page and the website so that you know what is happening. A new article comes out each month. I've promised them I will write a new article. And as each new article is released, I will let you know all about it. In fact, it's interesting. When I say synchronistic, I found out that a friend, one of the hosts of Ancient Aliens, David Hatcher Childress, has just released a new book, and he sent it to me, The Lost World of the Kham, the Khmer, and earlier people of Indonesia. And he has discovered very, very ancient societies out there that we really don't know about. He's also discovered similarities between the Indonesian building techniques and those of ancient South America. Tiwanaku is a real focal point. And he runs and actually shows imagery and information on Vietnam. We don't know a great deal about Vietnam except for the war we were embroiled in. But it's extremely old. Much of the sites there are hard to date. We just don't know how old they are. A few thousand years or what typical scientists would tell us, but no, it's very, very, very old. And then recently, in fact, just a few days ago, I learned that Dr. Robert Schock and Robert Bouval have jointly published and are releasing a new book called Origins of the Sphinx. Now, Schock and John Anthony West were the two who wrote a book on the Sphinx, dating it to probably 9,500 years or older. We don't hear about this in mainstream science simply because archaeologists are the dominant factors behind releasing information, Egyptologists also. And you won't read about that in history books, but the geology shows that the Sphinx is significantly older than what we are taught in school. So that new book, The Origins of the Sphinx, is coming out in a couple of months. And both Dr. Schock and Robert Bouval will be my guest in May. So stay tuned for that. I'm looking forward to speaking with them both. They'll be in the area, and we'll have a chance to speak with them. Hey, if you're in San Francisco, end of this month, April 28th through the 30th, check out the New Living Expo. There's over 80 speakers talking about ancient civilization, wellness, mindfulness, spirituality, and just tons of other topics. And yours truly will be moderating a panel discussion on, yes, can you believe it, ancient aliens. But the topic is, what is evidence? What is the evidence of ancient alien technology? And guess who's on this group, this panel? We have the host of Ancient Aliens, Giorgio Tsoukalos, Mike Barra. We had Mike on the show quite a few times. William Henry. We've had William Henry on the show. And the other, final panelist is the Native American perspective on ancient alien perspective, Clifford Mahoti, the Zuni elder of the Kachina clan. So, hey, if you're in the area, come on out. It's really, really inexpensive. It's only $29 to get in for the whole day. That gets you into all the panel discussions, gets you in all the lectures and the workshops. And if you want to see some of the big names like Don Miguel Ruiz, Dr. John Gray, David Wilcock, Michael Beckwith, and a handful of others, those are special events that cost a little bit more, but it's worth it. It's a good program. It's in the San Francisco. It's in actually the San Mateo Convention Center. If you're in the area or you're planning to be in the area, check it out. You can go to newlivingexpo.com, and they just published a new digital program guide. So you go to www.newlivingexpo.com, and you'll look for the digital program guide, and you can see the whole show. They have over 180 exhibits, and it's a very cool place. And of course, yours truly is part of it. And there's a lot of really nice programs there. They have a bookstore. It's worth a visit. Hey, Earth Angels is sponsored by Gaia. And remember, they are offering over 7,000 titles. And these are titles of subject matters that we feature here on Earth Ancients, but they also have quite a bit on healing, yoga, meditation. You know, a lot of people ask me, Cliff, you know, you've been meditating for years, right? And I say, yeah. Now, how do you meditate? And I kind of scratch my head because it's really individualistic. It's like, you know, everybody has to find their own path. But if you go to Gaia, they have 7 or 8 different types of techniques on meditation that you can learn. And they're all presented on video, on streaming media. And remember, you can check it out for just 99 cents for the first month. And after that, it's about $9.50. And to get this special offer, go to gaia.com/earthancients. Check it out, 99 cents. I mean, that's so inexpensive. I mean, it's like, you know, something to consider.
Of all the boys I've known, and I've known some.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
To you live from around the world, it's Earth Ancient News.
And as always, there's a lot to talk about. Each week, we have a Facebook page that is filled with contributions from different people around the world, as well as news that I post and our administrative staff post. Hey, this week, Julie Ryder, who's an investigator in Montana, has published a number of amazing photographs of these, she calls them the Montana megaliths, and she lives near that area. And we're talking about dolmens of megaton weight, megalithic stone structures that are thousands of tons. In fact, you know, she wrote an article, and it's actually part of this posting on the Facebook page. And she has detected electromagnetic signatures that are off the charts, and she's using the magnometer and some other devices. And we're going to have Julie on the program later in the year, but this is a phenomenon that is seen mostly on the eastern coast of the U.S., but in Montana, it seems like there's an entire community of these megalithic builders. And these are monstrosities. I mean, some of these stones must weigh, you know, over 100 tons. They're just monstrosities. They're huge. So you can see the entire gallery. You can learn more about Julie Ryder's work as an investigator on this Montana megalithic site. Go to Facebook or Earth Ancients, and always go to the group page, and you can see the entire gallery. I'm working. Try to get Julie out. I just learned from her that Graham Hancock's going to be coming out there to do some research as part of his new book. Yes, he's writing a new book. And so we should learn more from her pretty soon. Also, Ancient Origins has published a quite unique map. It's the USA map of all of the Native American tribes that were located throughout the U.S. And apparently there were over 500 recognized tribes in the 1800s. And I think it's now down to just a handful. And it's really sad. But this map is quite interesting. It describes the boundaries. It shows the boundaries. It actually shows the various tribes and has their various symbology, how they lived, all available on Ancient Origins, which is linked to our Facebook page. So check that out. Our 360-degree photograph gallery continues. This time, we are showing the ancient Mayan city of Ekbalam. This is a fantastic city. I saw it when it was just piles of stone. I've been back there. I was back there 5 years ago. And the main pyramid is the feature of this photograph. This is a stucco sculpture. And in this image, you can see these amazing figurines. Now, you know, there's figurines in different parts of Mayan buildings, but this series of figurines is unique simply because one of the main figures is a long-headed individual, a longhead. And I believe, and a number of people believe that he's up there because he was one of the main figures in that area. So check that out. We always try to publish one or two images of that are 360-degree. Remember, all you need to do is grab your mouse and click it, and you can move the photograph in a 360-degree parameter. It shows you the actual image of this huge stucco enclosure, but also you get a sense of how high up this pyramid is. And it's a really cool photo. I'll be announcing a tour. Now, we were going to do a tour this month, but we've moved it on to November. I'll be announcing it. This is a tour that includes Ekbalam, so you'll want to come along with us. It's going to be quite an amazing venture. We'll do it. Actually, it's going to be the week of Halloween, but I'll talk more about that next week when we publish the information for everyone to check out. Also in the news, the remains of a 13th dynasty pyramid was discovered at Dashar, Egypt, and they discovered it about a month ago. And the pyramid, the main blocks were all removed, and what is left is the foundation, an underground entranceway, and some fantastic hieroglyphs that they're just starting to decipher right now. You can see the entire article. You can see a whole series of photos of this pyramid, brand new, on the Facebook page. As always, I suggest go to the Facebook page each week. Facebook, Earth Ancients, go to the group page, and tons of very cool galleries. You know, some of you might say, well, I don't want to go to Facebook. I don't want to be I don't want to talk to anybody. It's fine. Just, you know, show up and check out the stuff and you don't have to worry about it too much. But check out all these galleries. It's really, really something to consider. So, our contributor this week is Peter DeJong, who is an expert on Peruvian stone masonry. We had Jan on with Jesus Gomara about a year ago, and in that interview, we learned of the different phases of the Peruvian, ancient Peruvian stone masonry. But in this series of photographs that he published, we actually see details of Machu Picchu and a section of Cusco that I've never seen before. So I wanted to talk to Jan a little bit about these photographs. So I gave him a call and was asking him specific questions that I think you might find interesting. So I'm always looking for new sources, and a couple of years ago, well, actually more than that, I connected with a research investigator in the Netherlands, a gentleman named Jean-Peter de Jong, and connected with his website. His website is called Ancient Mysteries Explained. And by the way, for those of you who are interested in ancient mysteries of Peru, I would suggest you check this site out. It's fantastic. And he has a lot of content in there that is really amazing. But recently, Jan posted a photograph that I attached to the Facebook website of a really interesting rock formation, which is quite typical of this strange period in Peru's history. And this formation is quite interesting because it shows what looks like volcanic rock erupting up into the earth. And then there's quite a bit of man-made tooling. And I call tooling angular shapes and angular formations. So, and a lot of people have commented on this photograph that I have posted. And I hadn't talked to Jan in a while, and I wanted to connect with him. So I gave him a call. He's speaking to him right now from the Netherlands. So let's say hey to Jan. Jan, how are you?
Hello, Cliff. Yes, I'm doing fine.
Good.
Great. You're phoning again. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it's been a while, and I'm glad we're connecting. I probably after the call here, we're going to talk a little more. But I wanted to ask you about this photograph simply because it's really unique in that it looks like either the Inca or somebody built a wall around this strange formation. First of all, it's in a place that I've never heard of before. Inca Linkbo? Say it for me. What's it located?
It's called Inquiltambo.
Inquiltambo.
Where is it located?
Yeah. What part of Cusco?
It's located less than half an hour from Cusco, if you know how to drive to there, because it's very unknown even for the local people.
Okay.
And 4 years ago, I managed to go there by the back door, I would say, because it was by a road that was very difficult to drive on. And we had to go down very steep and it was a bit dangerous. So, we managed to go there and get close with a car, but then we had to walk I think like 40 minutes or something like that. And then we could approach the place and it's a very special place and they're still digging there.
Yeah.
So it's quite new that this place is coming better known.
Yeah,
because the Culture Institute is now protecting the site, and it's also restoring some terraces that are there, and they're still digging. As you can see on some of my pictures, there are people working there. And when I was there last year, I'm talking about 4 years ago when I first time saw the site, and Jesus Camara took me there.
Right.
When I lived in Peru, that's now 10 years ago when I lived there. I lived there for many years, but I never went there. We didn't know the place. Jesus Camara didn't even know it at that time.
Oh, so, okay. So it's fairly recently discovered.
It's rather new. Of course, the place is not new, but it's, getting a bit more known now because of people taking pictures and going there.
Right.
And some investigators going there like me and Jesus, of course, who are showing me there and other people taking pictures.
Right.
And it's a very interesting place. And it's, some of the things are, of course, typical. And the picture I put on Facebook yesterday, it is one of the pictures I took last year.
Okay.
And you see it from a distance, and then you see how huge it is. It's a big rock, and it's typical Hanan Pacha style, as Jesus Camara calls it.
Let's talk a little bit about this, because for those of you who are not familiar with Jan's work, Jan is what I consider one of the real top research investigators who have followed along with Jesus Camara, whose father was instrumental in really dissecting the three phases. And what I want to ask you, Jan, is, and this is a question I keep having regarding these formations, It's almost like somebody had a technology that was able to create rock. You know what I mean? And when
yeah.
I say create rock, it's like when you're looking at this, it looks quite volcanic. Like someone sprinkled some dust or had some kind of a beam technology or something
mm-hmm.
that created the rock.
Yeah, well, it,
yeah.
it looks like if it was shaped by someone
yeah.
In the past. And the look it has is everywhere around in Peru and around Cusco and in Sacsayhuaman when you go a bit beyond the normal touristic attraction of Sacsayhuaman with the big walls. Mm-hmm. You go a bit behind, there's a lot of these kind of things.
Yeah.
So there are rocks and a rock in a place itself, in situ, as we call that.
Right.
Then you see that there is big formations of rocks that were touched by who was living at that time. And we don't know who these people were, but according to the theories of Gamarra, and this started with Jesus' father, Alfredo Gamarra, he identified all these rock formations that were touched in the far past, that it was from Harappa time. So that was
yeah.
the first time of humanity.
Yeah.
So it's been in a period long, long, long before the Incas. And he identifies this style, not only in Cusco, but also all around the world in other places and other sacred places, especially like we can see in Malta, if you go to mm-hmm. the Hypogeum, or you go to Egypt and you see the how you call it, below the Great Pyramid, the underground chamber.
Yeah, yeah.
Places like that, they are the typical Harappa style. And the rocks that I show in that picture is also what we call Harappa. And it's touched as if it was soft
yeah.
when they worked on it.
That,
and,
yeah.
and you can see that by the special things they made in the rock. And that is the theory of Gamarra. He says that all those rocks at the moment of construction, at the moment that they did those things in the rock, that rock must have been soft.
Right. Now,
so
they were
able to shape it as they wanted.
Harappa is what, 100,000 years ago or 50,000 years?
Something like that, yes.
Yeah.
It was according to calculations of Gamarra, like the period from over 100,000 years ago till like 80 or 70,000 years ago.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you mentioned the characteristics, and this is what's so strange about these rocks. It's like some device softened the stone. And then with a...
Well, it's the other way around.
Oh, okay. What do you say? Tell me what you say.
It was first soft, and then they had some device that could harden the rock, so it could... hold the same form that they shaped in it.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like a device, and we say it must have been with heat
mm-hmm.
because you can always see the traces of vitrification. You can find them on these kind of rocks.
And vitrification is that shiny quality to the finished
yeah,
stone
yeah,
that,
exactly.
that shows
yeah,
that
yeah.
extreme heat was applied. Okay, yeah, now that's interesting. Now, it seems to me that you've shown in your research that this type of Harappa is all over the world. We see it
mm-hmm.
In Greece, we see it in parts of Egypt, and so on and so forth. But
exactly.
but it's funny, and when we look at Peru, and I'm looking at this photograph, there's something about the coloration that is different than any place else. And is it because of the atmosphere being so high up, or what? What do you think about that? What's your opinion?
The color of the rock. Well, yeah, the color can be different in different places, and it depends. I notice in my pictures that sometimes it depends a bit on the time of the day, what color of the stones you get. You know, it can be a bit more gray or a bit more brown, or it depends on the place and also the time of the day what color the picture will be in. And so you can, from one picture, you just can't make that conclusion that it must be these colors. And you know, the typical stone, the kind of stone that is used for these formations is for the majority is New Cusco is limestone.
Oh,
so,
really? Okay.
Yeah. And of course you have the big volcanic magma, they say, and that is inside the Sacsayhuaman park. It's like as if there was a big magma. You say magma?
But
there you see also like steps made in it, typical things like the Inca throne, that's another kind of stone. I think it, what was it? I forgot which kind of stone it was, but there are different kinds of stones that were worked upon in that time and that we can call a Hanan Pacha style. So it's not only reduced to one type of stone. They had the technology to do it in more type of stones.
Okay.
That's another conclusion that's important. So the technology that they had, they could use it and apply it to different stones. But at that moment, it wasn't stone. It must have been soft. And according to Gamarra, it was because of the circumstances from the atmosphere and also the Earth as a whole, because the Earth was smaller and there was less gravity. And those conditions made it possible to do these things in the stone and to do everything on a bigger scale.
Okay. So I'm going to post some more photographs from your gallery. I'll pull some out so people can get more of a sense of this. But all right, hey, well, thanks, Jan. I appreciate you being with us.
Yeah, okay. It was great, Cliff. Thanks for the invitation, and have good luck with the show, and see you around.
Yeah, thanks, Jan. So that was Jan's assessment. This gallery that he put up is of Machu Picchu, but what we were talking about is another image that has been up for about a week. It is one of the strangest rock formations I've ever seen. It looks like petrified volcanic rock, which in some sections has been troweled with a hand trowel in the same manner you would trowel cement for a walkway. And it is just mind-blowing. Whatever they use technologically is just beyond us. We just do not know anything about this. It's beyond our understanding. You just don't hear about it in science papers because there's no way to explain it. So check it out. It's always on Earth Ancients Facebook page. Go to the group page and you see the entire gallery. Talk about wellness, talk about health care. We think about American health care system, it just doesn't seem to be working. I think we've lost our way, and a lot of people in medicine believe the same thing, that we have lost our way. America is now ranked 37th out of the industrial nations in terms of good health care systems. And we're great with analytics. We have all the scanners. We'll tell you what's wrong with you. But when it comes to true healing, I think we have to begin looking and taking a page out of the ancients' wellness technique. I have talked about my own journey from using antibiotics for different illnesses I've had, and changing over to Chinese medicine, where acupuncture, herbs are taken into place with much better results, much more thorough results, and no after effects. We seem to be focused on the quick fix in America. If you have someone or are dealing with a very serious illness, you are relegated to having to choose between surgery, powerful chemicals that really disrupt the body, or even irradiation. I have a brother that had leukemia that went through horrific system of what is currently considered healing. He was one of the lucky ones, and he's still with us today, but he's dealing with all kinds of problems constantly coming up. My guest today is Jennifer Gale, and Jennifer has written a book called The Science of Planetary Signatures in Medicine, Restoring the Cosmic Foundations of Healing. And this is a quite interesting book, simply because not only does she describe how the ancients used different healing techniques, but more and more information is coming about that we are not just physical beings. We are dense physically, but there's also dimensions that are more finely tuned. There's an auric field. There's something called the chakras. And for years, this used to be kind of a laughable area, simply because it's like, well, we can't see it, can't measure it. What are you talking about? But ancient people, ancient Chinese, ancient Egyptians, different cultures around the world understood, and they worked with these energetic fields. So today I'm really happy to have Jennifer with us to talk about what she has discovered. Jennifer, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Cliff. Thanks for having me.
So I have to ask you, this is a wonderful book. It's filled with a variety of healing techniques that were very, very old. Some of them we don't even know where they derived from. As an example, even though Chinese medicine has been around for thousands and thousands of years, we really don't know the inception date. This seems to appear. I mean,
right.
The meridians, which is a huge part of acupuncture, are not really validated by current medical technology, and yet
right.
they're a huge part of that. So what was your interest in writing this book? What was the kind of the focal point?
Well, gosh, I mean, I'll give you the short answer, I guess, because really it's a culmination of my life's work, my journey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as you said, just looking at our medical industry, medical industry, instead of what is helpful to human beings and getting well, literally getting well. And so my frustration in looking at that and my avid interest in sound healing, Chinese medicine, my avid interest in astrology, which began as a teenager, and understanding myself, who I really am, through the language of astrology, which I believe is a powerful tool in helping everyone understand their place in the cosmos. So there's so many things that I discovered in the process of doing the research for this book and writing it, and I really felt tremendous help from my star family. I'll just put it out there because that's what I believe in, and I know that I was guided, and I know that this message, this book rather, holds a message for people right now who are on the brink, who are frustrated and on the cusp of making huge paradigm shifts in their life,
right.
individually, and in all of the systems. All of our systems need a revamping.
Right. What do you see as a problem with our current, I'm going to just say it, wellness system in America?
Well,
what is the biggest problem?
Well, I mean, I'm going to go back to the time of Hippocrates, which is when really Western medicine, it was the inception of Western medicine. And while Hippocrates did understand the cosmic connection in terms of the four elements, the four building blocks, and was still practicing what they called humoral medicine, the four humors, which correlate with the four elements, he still separated the energetic and spiritual component from the study of medicine. And that is what began this schism, this huge schism, which has reached fever pitch right now in Western medicine. So, like you said earlier, unless it can be measured under a microscope, it isn't given any validity. And what I'm talking about in the book is that we need to go back to a holistic approach. And I know that word is used a lot, but what I mean by that is both yin and yang perspectives, both intellectual and intuitive perspectives, understanding that as a human being, we have both of these perspectives, and we're not whole if we don't address, if we just address the one. And so in Western medicine, what we're seeing is this reductionist viewpoint. And I was reminded today in having this interview in mind, I actually opened up the book and turned right to this page. It's a quote by Eliphas Levi, 19th century philosopher. But he says that modern science has decomposed the four elements of the ancients and reduced them to simple bodies. That which is simple, however, is the primitive substance. So, in other words, you know, we're addressing medicine and disease strictly from the material and primitive viewpoint, and we need to embrace wellness in its entirety.
Right. I was pleasantly surprised in the first part of your book where you talk about the great antiquity of mankind. And we had Michael Cremo on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he is a top researcher and has written some books on, really how old man is.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that is interesting to consider is that these ancient healing techniques, like the Chinese form of acupuncture, herb healing, and even some energy healing, they've been around for thousands and thousands of years. And one of the things that I find quite interesting is when you practice yoga, when you practice some of these very ancient techniques, there's something about them that triggers subtle energies in our bodies that we just do not understand. Can you talk a little bit about what you discovered in the ancient cultures and why that's important to this book?
Yeah. What I found so fascinating in doing this research, and I'm going to just qualify it by saying it's not 100% conclusive, but these are threads of connections that I began to see and patterns that held true from these ancient cultures all around the globe. And one in particular that's coming to mind right now is a connection between the eight primordials that the ancient Chinese talked about and the Ogdoad that was part of the Egyptian culture. So, that's just one of many, many examples and connections that I began to see from, like I said, ancient medicine and how it was practiced by the ancients all over the globe. But I do believe that there was, that Earth is, and especially America, is far more ancient than we were ever taught in our history books. And so where did they get this knowledge? I mean, I do believe, because I, and why I'm happy to be on this show, Earth Ancients, is that we were guided by ancient civilizations that were from other dimensions. And I believe that these teachings are the core of what the magic is, the science of magic, and the self-regulating capacity not only of Earth itself as a living organism, but our bodies, the human body, and how it's created. We have this ability to heal. And as you said, it's the subtle energies. It's going on at the subatomic level. So we don't have all of the answers, but that's what I feel. It's a direction in which we need to head and embrace the mystery. That's that, you know, instead of fearing the unknown, we need to travel down that road and keep asking these questions until we find more and more connections that point to our ability to heal ourselves.
We have experts, PhDs on this show that talk about their curiosity of these ancient cultures. Case in point, the Maya actually built their cities in alignment with various astronomical clusters of planets and, mm-hmm. and moons and things like that. We don't know why, but the elders would always tell me it's because of the connection with the cosmos. And I think modern society has lost that connection unless you're practicing healing arts, sacred healing arts, and that's a minority. But
yeah.
There's something about this connection with the cosmos that it needs to be realized. And I'd like you to talk a little bit about that cosmic connection. Now, you do in your book bring up the fact that astronomy and astrology were once more aligned, and through various cultures, more modern, they were separated, astronomy being legitimate and astrology being thought as a joke. But can you talk a little bit about cosmic healing, cosmic vibrations, and its importance in today's society?
Sure. Well, I will just start. There's a lot that we could go into, but
just give us the highlights.
Of,
that could be one whole program right there.
Exactly. So I'm going to focus on Pythagorean medicine and Pythagorean concepts, because this was an eye-opener for me. Even though through my study of acutonics, becoming a certified practitioner, I learned a lot about many of the ancient musicians, physicians, physicists, and they always integrated. The ancient physicians were not just physicians, they were initiates in a priesthood as well, so they understood the connection between spirituality, energy, and the physical body and healing. But getting back to Pythagorean concepts, what I discovered that really solidified my value and how and why I value astrology. to Pythagoreans, math and number in itself implies order and is the language of the cosmos. Number in space is represented by geometry, spatial relationships, harmonics and aspects, mathematical angles, that is. Mm-hmm. Number in time is music, and number in space-time is astronomy. So given that, it makes sense to me that astrology, if astronomy is the language of the cosmos, of the greater whole of which we all are part, then astrology is the language which speaks to the individual and addresses the individual's unique connection and place in the cosmos. You know, the astrology chart itself is frozen music because it's geometry. It's all about spatial and mathematical relationships. It's a snapshot of the heavens and the cosmic frequencies at the time a person is born. So in my therapy, using the planetary tone or tuning forks that are calibrated to the planetary tones, in combination with the mapping system on the body as founded upon Chinese medicine, to me, this is what makes sense. This is, I mean, yes, there are as many therapies out there, as many sound healing therapies out there as we have individuals on the planet, and everyone has to find what resonates with them. But I'm, you know, I can only write about what I know and what I know about and what is based upon my experience. So, that's where I'm coming from, and that's how I use the cosmic connection and cosmic signature in vibrational therapy.
fascinating. Again, how the Egyptians would even think about aligning their whole cities to connect with
yes.
various planetary systems is still a question. And I think that these societies, these ancient societies, had an understanding of subtle energy we just do not have a clue about. I believe that they were just a different kind of a human and probably had a sensitivity to those energies, whereas today we've lost it and we have to figure out get a machine together to scan the cosmos, you know?
Here's the other interesting thing about Earth and where these ancient sites were built. I believe, and this is part of what I'm incorporating into my next book, but I believe that these sacred sites, and I'm not the only one, there are tons of people out there who do,
right.
that the Earth itself has, just like the body, has acupuncture points that access energy on a deeper level and also access these cosmic energies. I believe that the Earth does too. And so these sacred sites were built specifically on points that have these very, very potent vortices of energy. And, you know, were built to so that Earth could receive these frequencies, these higher octaves, if you will, mm-hmm. Of healing frequency.
Yeah, it's amazing. Which brings up this topic of acupuncture. You have a section in your book that really opened my eyes, and very, very early writings about the use of acupuncture. I didn't realize that there were 365 acupuncture points on the body, which corresponds to 365 days of the year, which is just mind-blowing. Can you talk a little bit about your discovery of ancient acupuncture and its effects? I mean, because that right there is pretty amazing.
Yes, and there are correspondences even between Western tropical astrology and Chinese medicine. And I do want to say that different schools of thought in acupuncture will say that there are different numbers of acupuncture points on the body. But I have come across material that says there are 365 points approximately on the body, which is fascinating. But there, others will say 360, which represents the full circle of the zodiac. And then you've got 12 meridians, each assigned 2 hours per day in the circadian clock. And what's interesting about that in terms of astrology is that every 2 hours, a new constellation is rising in the east. That's why it's important to know what time you were born, because every 2 hours, the zodiac sign rising in the east on the eastern horizon changes. So you've got 12 meridians changing every 2 hours, and you've got 12 zodiac signs changing every 2 hours. I mean, that can't be a coincidence.
It's so amazing.
It is. And then you've got other patterns which of fours and threes, but there's also the I Ching, which correlates with, you know, the eight trigrams correlate to the eight primordials. And then they combine. You've got, so you have four elements in astrology. Two belong to the yang element, two belong to the yin element, fire and air yang, earth and water yin. But you also have six, let me see, you've got three modes, but where I was going with this in Chinese medicine is that you have three yin and three yang meridians in the upper body and three and three yang meridians in the lower body.
Right.
So again, six zodiac signs below the horizon and six above, each correlating with either the yin or the yang expression. So there are many correspondences, and I'm not, like I said, my book, the purpose of it is really to show these patterns, reveal, you know, to raise more questions and to have people ask, well, is it a coincidence or is there more to this story? And I would like to learn more.
Well, what you reveal to me, and the reason I really like this book, is you show that there are rhythms. There are, we're a physical being that is part of the earth, which is part of the cosmos, that the ancients understood that when you are out of rhythm, there's a way to rebalance the body, not through poisonous chemicals that shut things down. And when you're really sick with cancer, with some of these other very, very degenerative types of diseases, there's a complete series of functions that the body has, which is related to mind, body, and spirit, that need to be addressed. And when you address these areas, then you come back into harmony, back into rhythm. And I find that really refreshing. And the problem I see with a lot of people is that they've given up on their health care. And what that means to me is that rather than looking at what's going on in their life, what's their mental state, are they depressed? Are they eating well? Are they getting out and exercising? Are they connecting with nature, which is a harmonizing, rhythmic approach to life? They're going to their doctor and saying, fix me.
Yes, yes.
And that is what is killing people. What do you say about that?
I know, and that is what's sad about the human condition right now. We've been, you know, fragmented for so long. And we've just, it seems, as a collective consciousness, we've just resigned to giving our power away to an outside authority. And this isn't just medicine. This is in religion and in other areas, too. In, you know, government, but I don't want to go there. I just, you know, instead of, instead of understanding that we ourselves are imbued with this infinite wisdom that comes from the cosmos, that we have access to this, and all we need to do is remember, you know, pull back all of our parts, pull back all of those members that have been dissected from us or pulled apart from us, and understand that that we have access to this power at all times. And yeah, we need doctors. I'm not saying do away with a medical system. We have to have both in place, but we've been so polarized in one viewpoint that we are completely out of balance. And so we need to bring back in the, you know, quite frankly, the more yin receptive perspective that tunes into our intuition, that trusts the gut instincts we have instead of immediately panicking and going to a doctor. You know, symptoms that appear are simply messengers that, you know, if we could just remain in a place of neutrality in observing the information that comes forth and understand that our body is simply trying to guide us to better healing, better wellness. You know, certainly if you're experiencing acute and chronic problems that have just been going on because you've been in, you know, one viewpoint for a while, it may take some time to reverse that process and you may need the help of a doctor. But for those who are already well and who may be fearing that dreaded diagnosis or who have already received it, you know, just step back and instead of viewing this whole experience through the lens of fear, just, you know, contemplate for a second how things might change if you view it through the lens of love and trust and the implicate order and that your body has a self-regulating capacity. That's what I would like for people to begin to just think differently about it.
Now, I've noticed on your book that the book is co-written, maybe co-edited by Dr. Mark McCosey, who is the professor of pharmacology at Georgetown University School of Medicine. That's a pretty heavy-duty person to have on your book. What was what was his contribution to your content?
Well, he was very gracious about listening to my ideas. I met him as a grad student because my first class was complementary and alternative medicine. I got a master's in health sciences, and we were using his textbook. And I was so impressed with his work as an MD, as a physician, to write about these ancient therapies that are actually traditional, not what we consider, you know, what a lot of times conventional medicine is given the term traditional, and really it's the ancient therapies that are traditional. Anyway, I reached out to him to thank him, and we began doing some collaborative writing, and among them one was one of the chapters in his fifth edition textbook on hydration, and anyway, so we did some writing collaboration, and then I presented the idea for this book to him, and he said, I have just the publisher in mind. So I wrote the proposal, he edited it, we submitted it, and that's what got things rolling with the book.
That's great. So he kind of, does he have an understanding or at least a focus on the concepts in the book, like acupuncture and Chinese medicine?
Oh, absolutely.
I know a lot of physicians
he
out here.
I'm
in California,
so
a lot of physicians tend to be more tread lightly on that, or they actually believe in it. I know a couple of doctors that actually try to incorporate it, but it's tough when you.
He's been a voice in the wilderness for many years, and his work deserves recognition for really being one of the first MDs who really paved the way for validating these ancient therapies, Chinese medicine being one of many.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
Let's talk about some of these ancient figures that I've never heard of that you feature in your book. Tell me about this individual. He's actually noted as a semi-mystical emperor, Xun Nag, who lived 2700 BC, and he derived a system of the 365 herbs, which here we go again, 365 days of the year. But, I mean, and this is something that I find fascinating, and I've heard about it from the Maya, the elders who talked about these very, very ancient people that go so far back, it's almost like they're, you know, demigods or, as you call it, a semi-mystical individual. So talk a little bit about this individual.
Well, honestly, Cliff, I don't know that I can tell you any more than I wrote in the book. Because
okay.
They are, I mean, because they are semi-mystical. We don't have much information on them. But I gathered information part from, first of all, I'm just looking to see if there's anything I can add. But a lot of it, I used Mark Pinkham's book. It has to do with serpent wisdom. And there are, you know, we've come to really be so fearful as a people, modern day people, of these symbols that had a completely different meaning. And so The Return of the Serpents of Wisdom is the name of his book. And it was there that I began gathering information on Shen Nong and some of these other, the eight primordials that I brought up earlier, that divined information about the mapping system and how the body can heal itself. So this symbol of the serpent is still used in the modern caduceus symbol. But it's an ancient symbol of alchemy. Alchemy is the root of modern chemistry and modern medicine. And alchemy, it has a correspondence and correlation to the seven planets, the seven planetary metals, and all of the constellations and their different processes and what they mean in alchemy. But these serpents of wisdom, it had to do with managing the serpent fire or the kundalini energy that exists. So I hope everyone and listeners can picture in their head the modern caduceus with the rod and the two serpents intertwining with wings at the top. And this has to do, you know, the rod is the spine, and then the serpents on either side have to do with the solar and lunar energies intertwining and awakening the serpent power or the kundalini energy until it reaches the pineal gland.
You're talking about the symbol for medicine that has been used. Yeah, that's the doctor symbol. Yeah. Okay, interesting. Okay.
So I wish I could shed more light on Shen Nong himself, but he is one of many of the ancient figures that that I talk about in the book. And what they have in common is this use of alchemy and managing the serpent fire. And of course, herbs, and understanding that herbs and plants on earth and the minerals on this earth all use and utilize the planetary frequencies, not just the sun. It's not just the sun and moon that are responsible for our planet, our plant life and harvesting. It's all of the planets in the solar system.
And that's what the ancients knew, is that we're part of the earth, which is ultimately part of the cosmos, and it all has a frequency. And if we follow those natural courses, we can maintain wellness. And I think we're not talking about this, but it also helps with longevity. And that's one of the things that I found was quite interesting, is a lot of these very ancient people, some biblical people, lived into the hundreds of years. And they probably had to, and they understood that maintaining this frequency, this connection with the cosmos, with the earth, was the foundation for long wellness, long life, long wellness.
Yes.
I want to ask you, you feature a term that I want details on because I find it fascinating. We talk about celestial healing. What is a celestial signature?
Oh, okay. I call it celestial signature. I've also called it the cosmic imprint. But really what it is the natal chart, that unique signature that each one of us carries. So at the time a person is born, there is a snapshot of the heavens, and that is a signature, celestial signature, that they carry with them. Now, of course, the planets continue to move, and these are the transits that trigger or awaken different parts of that signature and areas of life as a person goes through their life. And then, of course, you have the progressions, the progressed sun and moon. So again, yang to yin relationship, conscious to unconscious relationship. So people are always evolving, but that basic signature is something that is analogous to a bottle of wine that carries the notes of the grapes that made it. And the more it matures, the better it's going to taste. So people always ask, well, what about twins that have, they're born in the same time, same place, and virtually or just a minute apart, they have practically, the identical signature. But the thing is, because consciousness, life force energy, and the soul is what infuses that signature, it's also, I like to use music as a metaphor. Think of a musical composition, notes on a page, just like the planetary signature, the celestial signature, notes on a page, basically. But it's going to be brought to life differently according to whether a student is playing it or a master is playing it. So it all depends on the consciousness, the level of consciousness of that soul, in how the signature is brought to life. And there are, you know, infinite possibilities. I don't look at astrology at all as fatalistic, like this will happen to you. It's simply a way, you know, what note do I want to focus on now? And as the transits do act like triggers, it's like needle insertion in an acupuncture session or a tuning fork plate, like in acutonics, tuning forks placed on an acupuncture point. It's accessing those reservoirs of energy that the universe is wanting to awaken, wanting to revitalize in a person's life.
Interesting. Now, you've touched upon a few things that hint at astrology. Now, is it your belief that astrology does play a part in wellness if we know where we have different cycles, transits and things like that?
Absolutely.
That's important. So how?
Yes.
So I guess what you're saying is getting a reading by someone who really knows their stuff, and then looking for these transit, looking for these periods in our life to watch for. Was that the suggestion?
Yeah, I mean, it's understanding the cycle and flow of energy. And when you're in the flow of energy, you're not resisting the change. You're not resisting the information that's coming to you, whether it comes in the form of a symptom, physical symptom, or emotional or spiritual discord. So, yes, I mean, one way is to simply go to a professional reader and just get the bull's-eye view or soul's perspective on what is happening now, that you're not crazy, that you're experiencing exactly what needs to happen right now, and to trust in the process. So that's key. That's number one. And then if you want to take it physically, that's part of the work that I do and that acutonics practitioners do, is to apply vibrationally what is in discord, what planetary players, let's say, are contributing to the dissonance and the discord or the disease, and to treat the body by way of vibration to bring harmony back.
So if somebody says that someone has been given a prognosis of cancer, for instance, and they went to an astrologer who knows their stuff, would that individual be able to see, in your perspective, where this disharmony has come into play, and maybe make some suggestions as to how to present techniques for becoming well again?
I absolutely feel that if someone is dealing with cancer, it started emotionally. Whether or not it came from physical toxins or their environment or emotional toxins, I do feel that there is an emotional root to all physical disease. And in that respect, certainly getting some insight from an astrologer could certainly shed light on the emotional connection to what's going on physically. Is that going to be the full answer? No. I mean, you're going to absolutely need to treat the body with however you choose to, going to a doctor, receiving radiation or chemo, or receiving herbs, going to an acupuncturist, or doing all of the above, depending on how significant, you know, how far along the disease is.
Yeah. There was a time when I followed a number of physicians that were using the multidisciplinary approach to major illnesses, major chronic illnesses, cancer and arthritis and things that just don't go away quickly. And it seems like medical science is on the fence still in terms of using multidisciplinary, because you can say that the pharmacological industry is almost built in to current conventional medicine. And so using these powerful drugs is and chemotherapy is part of the process. And in my view, the biggest issue that I see in America, and I've been around the world, and by the way, that France is the number one country for health, according to the World Health Organization.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because that's an industrial, high-tech country. But like other European countries, they use a combination of complementary medicine and maybe keep an eye on not using such toxic approaches. But in America, in our market society, medicine is a big business. Business. And that is a huge part of the healing system, which I think is the downfall and why we are so far behind other industrial nations.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, if I may, that is one of the reasons I wanted to write this book, because I feel that our the best health insurance any human being can apply is self-knowledge, self-awareness. Mm-hmm. Know who you are, know what your body really needs, and take your power back. I mean, follow and trust your inner guidance. Cultivate that muscle. Cultivate your inner guidance. And know that, that life doesn't have to assert itself on you. Mm-hmm. You have the power to awaken healing at a very deep level and capitalize on that. So, yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, receive whatever help along the way you need, but don't just abandon your wellness to pharmacology.
Yeah. Well, I mean, again, it's our society. You know, we're a quick fix. You know, you get a sore throat, you get a headache. Yeah. I had a friend who had a sore throat for weeks, and she began freaking out. So she goes down and gets over the counter cough medicine or sore throat medicine, and it doesn't go away. So then you accelerate it. You take the next step and go antibiotics, and then if that doesn't work, you go this. And I mean, it's the quick fix, and it's really hard for us.
And yet it isn't. Because it just is a vicious cycle of one problem after another.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had people on the show who are Native Americans, and the Native American approach is different. You look at your life and what the stresses are. You look at it from emotional, spiritual, you know, are you able to discuss how you're feeling? What's going on emotionally in your life? And that plays a huge part.
Yeah.
Huge part. And you kind of brought that out in your book. I have to ask you, what is astroharmonic medicine? I find that an interesting concept.
Yeah. Well, that is what I described a little earlier in terms of how I use the astrology, the celestial signature of the person to customize an acutonics treatment. So astro for astrology, harmonic being the harmonic tones represented, calibrated to the planetary frequencies. that is just a term that I use to describe what I do.
Mm-hmm. So
did that make sense?
Well, I mean, it's kind of vague because,
okay.
I mean, if someone were to come to you and go, Jennifer, I'd like to have a treatment. Is it, do you look at their astrology chart and kind of sync that with some sounds or something?
Yeah.
Or?
I have an intake form. So I borrow from Chinese medicine. I'm looking at patterns. And so I am getting to know what is happening in their life. Sleep patterns, dietary patterns, elimination patterns, all of those things. And yeah, and then I use the astrology chart to support that healing process. What else is going on? What is the universe asking them to change right now? Because healing is change, let's face it. It's healing requires transformation, and transformation is change.
Yeah, and I see various illnesses a person has throughout their life as little life episodes mm-hmm. where you're being asked to look at something. And if you're really, really sick, there's something going on in your life. This is a very complex subject because some people may have genetic disease, and then you get into, you know, why did I get this? You know, some crippling neurological disease or something that's genetically based. So it's very, very, very complex. But
it
I think if you, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, I just wondered, I mean, I don't know what your viewpoint is on this, but I definitely believe that we don't have to be held captive to our DNA. DNA mm-hmm. responds to our thoughts, our feelings, and, you know, even modern science tells us that as soon as we observe something, that something changes. So if we can change our perspective around this genetic disease, we can heal. And I believe many of us incarnated at this very specific time to heal many ancestral patterns that are no longer viable, that no longer serve our higher purpose. So if you have a genetic disease, it doesn't mean that you have to live with it. You may have chosen to transform it.
Yeah.
That's
wow.
The way I look
That's
at it.
That's very powerful. Yeah. No, I like that. I don't think about that enough. That's a great perspective. I mean, if you have a family history, in my family, there's a history of heart disease, and my father passed away at 65, which is young. My uncle mm-hmm. passed away at 62. And there's all boys in my family. I'm the oldest, and everyone's freaked out about their hearts, you know. My whole thing is if you just, you know, balance your life and take as much stress out of it as you can and, you know, try to eat well and things like that. I don't know. I haven't got to that stage.
And also, I think and forgive me for making this generalization, but I do think that for men in general and for the yang essence, it's about opening the heart chakra. So let the heart lead, you know, your life and your guidance, and let the heart inform what steps to take.
Give me an example of that. So if a man who's, you know, working 9 to 5 like everybody else is opening his heart, what is that? Being more sensitive? What do you say? Give me some examples.
Well, I think, it's been my experience, let me just say that in general, women tend to have the upper chakras open and be more intuitive, and they're more receptive to the spiritual, emotional energies, the invisible, because that's what yin is. It represents the unseen realm, whereas men are more physical. They're the doers. They're in their mental bodies. They're action-oriented. What I do, you know, they equate what they do with their how valuable they are. And so for them, it's like they're moving from the lower chakras into the upper. And so when the kundalini energy wants to move, it's there may be a block in the heart chakra, but allowing that to be opened and accessed, so it, you know, that would be more emotional, that would be more feeling oriented than in the mental body, in the rational body. And it might involve more intuition.
I think that a lot of men are going to kind of go, this is, what are you talking about? This is insanity. It has to be, and when you say chakras, I completely understand what you're talking about. I understand about energy. But for a large majority of men, it has to be rephrased in a way related to either sensitivities, if you can mm-hmm. turn that into sensitivities, or shown to them on some level of analysis. And what that would be is, and if we don't have a machine to show it, it's like, look, you need to address this issue or you're going to have a problem. And I don't know how they do that now. I think someone like yourself could present it. But on the more of a general scale in terms of wellness, the traditional medical doctors are going to say, well, you don't feel well, here's a drug.
Yeah. Well, here's an example based on some male clients that I've treated. You know, and it's not just male clients. Again, I am not one of these people who likes to stereotype. But because I talk about yin energy and yang energy, there does seem to be a pattern here. And for women, it's about getting more into their physical body and trusting that and being able to feel empowered to manifest on the physical realm. But again, this is based on my experience. It's not going to be everyone's. So getting back to some male clients that I've had, you know, they will present with anxiety, you know, like they'll be getting anxiety attacks and not understand why. So the heart palpitations and or symptoms that have to do with that fourth chakra area and opening the heart. And I feel, and the way that I have treated that, which has mitigated these problems, by the way, which are not, they're not seriously physical. So let me just make that clear. It's not like they need to see a doctor for their heart. But a lot of men may be having some issues around the heart, and they do panic because they think there's something physically wrong with their heart, and it may just be energy wanting to open up that heart space. It could be that.
Yes. And I've discovered that on my own, is the body will tell you things and little pains and little strains and things like that. And we're so cut off from our bodies. It's just so amazing. Yeah. We're so cut off because we sit on our can all day in front of a screen, or we're doing work that is taxing and stressful that shifts our awareness. So
yes.
It's a cultural thing, you know, it's really a cultural thing. And that could be why we're such a sick nation. And that sounds terrible to say. It really does. But boy, we got problems.
Being the, you know, ever positive person that I endeavor to be, I will just say the darkest hour is before dawn. So, you know, I think the best is yet to come.
Well,
I really
always
do.
Looking, I'm always, I have a positive outlook, you know, and I started this program simply because I wanted to inform people about, you know, other possibilities of existence. And this book of yours is a great step in that way. The book is The Science of Planetary Signatures in Medicine, Restoring the Cosmic Foundations of Healing. It's a really interesting read. In our final moments here, Jennifer, what do you hope for people to get as a takeaway from reading this book?
One of my favorite questions, and I'm going to give the same answer I've said before because it bears repeating. What I really hope people will take away from this is that the law of reciprocity is a cosmic law. It is not just a religious doctrine. It's so much more than that. It's the way the universe is built. And so when it comes to health, when it comes to happiness, you know, you have to understand that the way you observe life is making a huge impact on how well you are and how well you feel. And so if you can perceive the inner workings and understand that there is an implicate order and that the universe is benevolent and really wants to see us succeed, be healthy, be happy. Trust in that, and the law of reciprocity will reward you in every way.
Wow, thank you. Jennifer Gale, it's been a pleasure. Before we let you go, where can we learn more about your work and your book and maybe some other articles you've written? Do you have a website?
I do. Thank you. It's Soundworks by Gale. G-E-H-L is the way my last name is spelled. Soundworksbygale.com. And slowly but surely, I'm getting the blogs on there. But yes, my contact information, articles, all of that can be accessed on the website.
perfect. And I am going to post an article you sent to me, which I thought was very well written, if you don't mind, on
Thank
our
you.
Facebook page, and also put a link there. We do have our banner with you on it, which is
Wonderful.
Featured today. But I'll also put this article on there so people can read a little bit more about your work. So thanks for joining us, Jennifer. It's been
Thank
fun.
Thank you, Cliff. All right.
All right.
Okay. Until next time.
So that was Jennifer, and I really think that she's one of many people who are talking about, you know, techniques from the ancient past, and more of this information is coming through in terms of healing. Chinese medicine has been around over 5,000 years, but there are other techniques out there that we need to begin to look at, because you can't keep taking drugs. You can't, you know, I mean, it's scary as hell to have a doctor tell you have a serious illness. Looking at complementary medicines that really bring you back into your best is something to consider. So anyhow, I hope you enjoyed that. Next week, my guest is David Hatcher Childress. He's got a new book out on ancient Indonesia. I think you're going to be blown away when you hear about Vietnam. I had no clue that Vietnam has very ancient cities, megalithic cities. And he's also covered some areas that we've had on the show before. He has no information on the Gunung Pinang and Java. That's in Jakarta, Indonesia. I think you are going to enjoy the show. Be well. We'll talk to you again.